I believe in lust, I believe in promiscuity, and I believe in trust. I believe in love, and I believe in poetry, and I believe.
Today on Shtetl on the Shortwave, we're talking about self-hatred and how this concept has become a bit of a controversial topic in Jewish culture. Stay tuned, and if you want to download this episode or past episodes of Shtetl on the Shortwave, you can go to iTunes or shtetlmontreal.com.
Believe in love. I believe in the Father, the Son, and Holy Ghost, and I believe in lager, cigarettes and dope. Yeah, I believe in love. And you believe in your prophet, and you believe in your pope, and you believe in your guru, and I believe and hope that you believe, that I believe that you believe in love. 'Cause I believe in anything if I believe that you believe in love.
Welcome to Shtetl on the Shortwave on this very lovely Friday in April. Today, we're going to be talking about self-hatred. Next week, on Wednesday, April 25th, the Mailand Chavura, which is a grassroots community here in Montreal, is having its fourth salon in collaboration with Shtetl. It's called Self-Hate, A Loving Look at a Jewish Tradition. And it's going to be happening at a public space in the Mile End or in the Plateau. And everybody's welcome to come and talk about this issue that is can be a bit of a touchy subject and complicated and has so many layers to it. And to get us ready for the event next week, today in the studio, we're talking about self-hate with Joseph Rosen and the author behind Lick My Knish. Joseph Rosen is a teacher and a writer. He's doing his postdoc in history at Concordia University. And the young woman who writes Lick My Knish is doing her master's in media studies at Concordia as well, and is also a filmmaker. So welcome to both of you to Shtetl on the Shortwave.
Thanks, Tamara.
Thanks for having us.
So, Madame Lick My Knish, we got to deal with the subject of how are we going to address you today?
I'm supposed to come up with a better pseudonym, I guess.
Yeah, like I was saying, you can choose, you know, you can choose. You want to be Christina, you want to be Rivki, you want to go by Lick, I don't know, Knish.
Why don't we do, I was trying to think of a sexy name. Let's go like Sasha. I like Sasha.
Sasha. Nice. Okay, Sasha. So, well, why don't we start by talking about your blog a little bit? How did you come up with the name Lick My Knish, and what's the blog about?
I guess it started with a friend of mine and I had been talking actually like for many years about starting a blog about our sex lives and about sexuality and about all the conflicts that we sort of deal with, the conflicting messages you get from the media, society, and sort of how we are addressing them in our lives. And we were sort of impressed with all the different blogs that were already out there and lots of different feminist projects that already exist. But we also felt there wasn't something that was speaking to our particular experience. And one day we were talking and we realized that Judaism was a huge factor that we sort of weren't recognizing, the culture of Judaism and how that was sort of intersecting with our sex lives. So Lick My Knish was born from that, and we kind of hope that there are other Jewish women that maybe could relate to it.
So some of the stuff that you've written for Shtetl has been, some of it has been of a sexual nature, like God at the Gyno or Best Pap Ever, but other stuff really has looked at your Jewish identity and your conflict with it. There's A Jewish Education, which is a beautiful, incredible piece that I love that totally touches on everything that we would talk about in terms of self-hatred, anti-Semitism, internalized anti-Semitism, the Holocaust, all these things. And then your most recent piece, which we're going to talk about after, which is No Nice Jewish Boys. And I hope that you don't mind if I grill you a little bit about those and find out.
Not at all.
Okay, what your beef is with Judaism. I have a question for both of you. Do you consider yourselves self-hating Jews?
I think I was a self-hating Jew for sure when I was younger. I went through a phase where I really felt uncomfortable with Jewish culture, Jewish religion, and I didn't want to identify myself with that. That being said, I think as I've gotten older, I've been trying to sort of work on that and change that. I've been reflecting a lot about it, and I don't like how that's how I've sort of grown up. So it's a work in progress for me.
Joseph?
I think I keep changing my mind on this, but actually I think I'm not a self-hating Jew. I did think so for a long time, but when I talked to two friends about whether they were interested in coming to the salon next week on self-hatred, and they both said variations of, I don't know if my self-hatred is technically Jewish or mm-hmm. not. And I think that that's a really interesting question. So I'm not totally sure whether my own self-hatred is totally Jewish or not. It intersects with it. It's tempting to think of it as Jewish. As I joke with one friend, I was like, are you sure you don't want to come? Like, you could, I'm offering you the chance to blame your self-hatred on the Jews. But he still said no anyway. So actually, I don't think that I am. But I think that there's the Larry David's, one of his greatest jokes that I've loved is when he gets caught whistling Wagner and he's accosted by someone who accuses him of being a self-hating Jew. And he responds by saying, listen, I may hate myself, but it has nothing to do with being Jewish, which is, I think, a fascinating joke. Like, qualifies as almost like, you know, the final Jewish joke or something like that.
Right. So, Joseph, I forgot to mention that that you were a board member on the Mailand Chavura, and some people listening might never have heard of the Mailand Chavura. Do you want to tell us a little bit about it? I'm a member as well, but I'll give you the floor to explain.
Oh, sure. We're a grassroots community that just started only maybe, is it 3 years ago, something like that, of a bunch of various institutionally non-affiliated Jews based loosely in the Mailand and Plateau area, but it's now expanded, who I guess wanted to get together and start to engage in various forms of Jewish culture, but weren't necessarily attracted to the institutional forms of Jewish culture that existed already in Montreal. So formed something of an alternative and Jewish grassroots Jewish community that it's kind of a work in progress, I guess. We're exploring what it means for us to be part of a Jewish community. And it's a few years now, and there's Shabbos dinners on Friday nights, and we've started celebrating pretty regularly most of the holidays. So it's interesting. An exploratory work in progress.
Okay, and why did you want to become a member of this community, and now you're on the board, so you're really quite involved?
Ah, well, how I got tricked into being on the board. I've always been interested in religion. I know it hasn't been cool in my demographic. My demographer told me I shouldn't do it, but I didn't listen to him, and I've always been interested in religion, and I'm also interested in kind of collective rituals and these kind of questions, and so that's there. I also had a daughter now. She just turned six, and in fact, two nights ago, she was asking me all these questions about God. She just hit the moment when she asked me, she said, Daddy, what do people pray about? Just out of the blue, as we're having dinner, what do people pray about? Anyways, and so I've enjoyed, and also kids love rituals, so if you light the menorah for Hanukkah, kids love it. Doing the Afikoman, hunting for the matzah on Passover, and like singing songs. Kids just love the kind of like really embodied rituals. Like, you learn a song, Ma Nishtana, you get to learn this, some Hebrew words. It's, I don't know, she loves it. So some of my continuing to go on in the community has been as much about how much she's interested in it as me.
Okay. And so what is it, whether it was in the past or whether even today, what is it about Jewish community or Jewish culture that turns you off or alienates you?
I think a big factor for me has always been the way women are treated culturally and sort of in religious texts, I guess. I don't know. I haven't studied the Bible. I don't know that much about it, but the little I do, or the little education I did have, very much turned me off at a young age, the way women were treated. And also just within my own family, the dynamics and sort of the cultural traditions of the way women were supposed to act and men were supposed to act. I definitely found there was a double standard, and I think that played a big role for me.
In a number of your pieces that you've written, I hope you don't mind me asking this, but in a number of them, something that comes up quite often is sort of a discomfort with the wealthy Jews or the wealth of Jews. Is that something that you still feel uncomfortable with, or that you've worked through, or how do you feel about that stereotype of our community and whether it's real or not?
Yeah, that's definitely something I'm trying to work through, because I don't feel that stereotype is true, really. But when I was younger, you know, I didn't come from a religious family. We weren't really part of a Jewish community. The few experiences I had were at actually summer camps and Jewish summer camps. And that was really my only experience of like feeling part of a Jewish community. Mm-hmm. And I felt very alienated from the other kids. And I think part of it is also just that preteen age where kids are trying to show off the wealth they have. It's all about the gadgets you have and the clothes you have. But I really felt that I wasn't a part of that. And so I immediately saw this group as this wealthy group of Jewish kids that sort of made me feel like an outsider. And so I think that stereotype kind of... That's where I got that from, which very much went against my upbringing. I was brought up, my grandparents survived the Holocaust, and when I was a kid, I was taught the opposite, that all Jewish people are poor. That was what I understood. We have no money. My family was very much middle class, but the way my parents addressed money was, we have no money. You know, you have to save everything. Everything has to be cheap, because they came from this sort of immigrant, I think, mindset of when you come with nothing, you have to save everything you have. So it was this weird contradiction, and it's strange that I internalized it so quickly of being with these wealthy kids and suddenly thinking I went from one extreme to the other, and I'm not really sure how that happened, but yeah, it was something I definitely did not want to be affiliated with, these rich Jewish kids.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Mm-hmm. And you, Joseph, what are some of the things about... This is your life. What are some of the things about Jewish culture or Jewish community that have alienated you?
Well, actually, I kind of want to stick with the issue of money, which seems so fantastic and so interesting, what you're saying there about feeling alien. I mean, in some ways, it might be a little bit similar to me. Just last night, I was out with some people, and I told them that my Jewish father was a truck driver. And they were like, what? Like they were like, never heard of this before. Like, never heard of a Jewish truck driver, right? So there's this moment where what you're saying is also, there's a moment of class as well, right? And it's interesting because is this, what we're talking about in terms of being ambivalent about Jewish culture is also a class conflict. Right at the heart of what you said is this conflict between class positions within Judaism, perhaps distributed over generations, one generation that was of a particular economic class and another generation that's of another class. And I think this is a way in which that tension gets turned into a question of, I mean, is that a Jewish issue or not? I mean, it's interesting whether that gets called Jewish or not, or whether it gets called a class conflict, right?
Mm-hmm.
I probably had some similar stuff as well. I wasn't that steeped in Jewish culture when I grew up. In fact, it's technically, I think my father is technically, he's the self-hating Jew, actually. I think I'm probably a second, I hope he doesn't listen to this, but if he does, Dad, I understand. But I think I'm a second generation self-hating Jew in that sense. And so we didn't actually hang out with a lot of Jews. So I don't actually have all of those same cultural references that everybody else sort of seems to have. When I sort of meet mainstream Jews, they have sort of a certain shared stuff about what happened at their bar mitzvahs and whatnot. And mine sort of, I don't think, quite falls into the same experience that everyone else seems to have had. So you sort of feel ambivalent because you sort of feel like you belong and you sort of feel like you don't belong. And there's just the question about whether or not you belong, I think, is key to this discussion about our ambivalent relation to Jewish culture.
So do you feel like you belong in Jewish culture now? Like in Jewish community, do you fit? Do you belong?
I guess so. I sort of feel like maybe I'm prone to assume that I don't belong kind of anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
But it's almost kind of like I've had to sort of look at myself from the outside. Sort of be, well, like objectively, Joseph, it does sort of look like you do belong. But one part of me is looking at myself from the outside when I say that.
Like even involvement in let's say the Mailand Chavura, which is a whole gang of people who are alienated from, in some way or another, alienated from Jewish culture or the Jewish community, and who have come together to form a Jewish community. What kind of feelings do you have when you tell other people about your involvement in a Jewish group where there are religious observances that are, it's not a religious group, but we, you know, the holidays are celebrated and there are cultural events too, but like there's Shabbat dinners. So how do you feel when you're telling your friends like, well, I can't come tonight because we're going to a Shabbat dinner?
Right. That's a great question. Sometimes
your hipster friends in the Mile End.
I definitely feel embarrassed sometimes because I have a lot of friends that just think all religion is total crap and why would you possibly, some hardcore sort of secular friends. And obviously hanging out with a religious community is also like, on the one hand, I think that it has a little bit more street cred because it's Jewish. Like I think affiliating yourself with Jewish culture in the Mile End is like a lot easier to spin that as cool than, for example, if someone were to say like, yeah, I went to mass for Easter, like trying to spin that would be even harder actually to admit in our sort of secular, you know, hipster milieu or whatever. So sometimes I feel mixed. You know, the other day actually was during the Seder. We actually had a third Seder because I wanted to have to celebrate with some friends that I didn't get to celebrate. And also just as a chance to make my own brisket because I love to make brisket. And I was a little intoxicated and I realized that when I was in cooking, I had forgotten to buy dessert. So I quickly ran out to my dépanneur and then I was standing at the dépanneur that I know these guys. I talk to them all the time. And the one guy there said to me, oh, I didn't know you were Jewish. And I was like, I didn't know why he was. And all of a sudden, I realized I was wearing my yarmulke. Ooh. And all of a sudden, here I am, like, I'm, you know, really stoned at my corner dépanneur wearing my yarmulke and sort of like getting outed. And it felt really weird. I didn't know whether, I sort of felt quite embarrassed.
Why? Yeah.
Well, I don't know, because it's like, oh, I'm observing a religious holiday. That's so weird.
Right.
I think. I don't know. That's, you know.
I don't know what neighborhood you live in, Sasha. Are you a downtowner? Are you a...
I'm an NDG-er.
NDG-er. Okay. So in NDG, there's not a very big Hasidic community as far as I can tell. But do you think that like being in a neighborhood where there's a lot of Hasidic Jews affects kind of how you feel, Joseph, about let's say being seen outside wearing a kippah?
I don't know. I don't know. I'm not sure about that, actually. I have many Hasidic neighbors right on both sides of me. And so often it's come up a few times around certain holidays. So they know that we probably celebrate. So when my daughter Ruby was singing, she was practicing Ma Nishtanah, I think, was it even last year? Or maybe it was the year before, actually. And so like the Hasidic kids next door were like, what's going on here? This like blonde, blue-eyed girl is singing Ma Nishtanah next door. So I've had a few interactions with them. And it actually is kind of fun. Although there's a whole other tension because it's kind of like, are we part of the same community or not? And right. It's actually quite unclear. The Hasidic, neighbors I have sometimes sort of seemed kind of interested and surprised that we celebrate things too. And they'll often say, I don't speak Yiddish, but they're all like, Is du bist Yid? Is du bist Yid? And I don't know if that's it, but I know that they're asking me, are you Jewish? Are you Jewish? So the kids are totally, they still can't believe it, even though I've answered them quite a few times. Every time they see any indication of Jewish culture, they re-ask that question. So I guess that's kind of all right. But when my Greek dépanneur guys that I love to death, they're great. When all of a sudden I get outed in a moment there, I was the one guy. The other guys all know I'm Jewish.
So when you saw the Greek dépanneur guy saw that you were a Jew, a real Jew that wears a yarmulke and that probably underneath was wearing all kinds of other weird stuff that you couldn't see. This alter ego, this other identity that was being outed. That's how it felt.
Kind of, yeah. And you don't really know what he's thinking. It's almost kind of like, I don't know, you're sort of like, but I'm not religious though or anything. Like, I'm not crazy. I'm not some like totally ridiculous religious freak. It's just like, I almost want to explain to him, no, it's the brisket. It's my daughter. It's about all, you almost want to explain why you're doing these things. But even then you sort of feel sheepish about it.
Huh. What do you guys think of when you hear the term self-hatred? What does it mean for you?
Oh my God, that's quite a loaded question. I feel like that's something you need to work out with a therapist or something. Self-hatred. For me, I guess what it means is I guess sort of there's some kind of being uncomfortable with parts of yourself and parts of yourself that you kind of want to deny exist or that you wish weren't there and sort of struggling with trying to sort of, you know, find this ultimate goal of complete self-love. I guess it's kind of cheesy, but that's what I guess makes me think of.
Mm-hmm. And Joseph, your article that you wrote for Shtetl magazine, you've written a few that I totally love, was In Defense of Self-Hatred. And I recommend everybody listening read the article. It's really brilliant. You have your own particular way of defining self-hatred, and I think it's something you've thought a lot about. So do you want to give us a little bit of a 101 on how you define self-hatred?
Okay, sure. After thinking about it for a while, I think that The short answer is that self-hatred is what happens when we allow someone else's opinion of us to have more weight and more value than our own opinion or understanding of ourselves. As I was thinking about self-hatred again for this, I was thinking about W.E. Du Bois' concept of double consciousness, which emerged out of his reflections upon the African-American experience and the ways in which for African-Americans, on the one hand, they would understand themselves, they would be conscious of themselves from their own perspective, but also as a minority living in a larger group, they were very, very aware of how white America sort of viewed them as the other. So the double consciousness is this moment where you see yourself both from your own perspective and from the majority's perspective, so to speak. And I think that a lot of different ethnic and immigrant experiences would actually relate to this in different ways. So in this sense, Jewish self-hatred is one variation of a minoritarian experience or an immigrant experience within a dominant culture. Now, one can also sort of say that psychologically, it's also true that one always has others, you know, whether one's a minority or not. And one always, on the one hand, has one's own experience of oneself, but also one comes to learn other people's experiences of you, whether it's your mother's. And for a psychoanalyst, this would be key. Your mother and your father's opinion of you would be these, like, really important positions. But even as an ethical person moving around, you're going to realize that other people have an opinion of you. So your sense of yourself moves back and forth between what do other people think of you and what do you think of you. And in some ways, self-hatred is the moment when the other's perspective, for some reason, gets more weight. Right? Mm-hmm. It's the tension that emerges when you almost give the other's opinion, negative opinion of you, gets more weight than your own understanding of yourself.
Right. Like, so if somebody looks at you and says, you're cheap, then you think they must be right, and that becomes how you see yourself.
Exactly. In the context of Jewish self-hatred, it would be exactly that. Within a mainstream dominant anti-Semitic culture, you would get certain images and stereotypes perpetrated about Jews, and you would come to think that those negative stereotypes were in fact true. Mm-hmm. And this is where we come back to the question of money, and it gets complicated whether you're... So really, we could sort of say whether the fact that you're uncomfortable with the rich, privileged Jews that you met at summer camp, is that you internalizing an anti-Semitic hatred of moneyed Jews? Or is that your own perspective? And is that actually kind of not necessarily about anti-Semitism? Could it be a conflict over class position within Jewish culture?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So there's the anti-Semitism that you internalize, and that's one type of self-hatred, which is questionable. Is it internalized, or is it like just, you know, your personal point of view on things? And then there's another type of a self-hatred as well. And do you want to speak to that, like the self-hatred that's imposed on people? Like, it's not necessarily something that you feel about yourself. Self-hatred. It can be something that you're accused of.
Right, exactly. Yeah, this would be the second thing. I think the first model is, I think, how we usually think about it. It's a very standard to think about Jewish self-hatred as an internalization of the anti-Semitic position. But there's another way to look at it, which is, and if we look at, as you said earlier, if you Google self-hating Jew right now, you're immediately going to get led to a whole bunch of really intense arguments and mudslinging over concept of Zionism and the question of Israel and Palestine. So some Jews calling other Jews self-hating Jews also articulate some pretty deep conflicts, I think, within the Jewish community. Mm-hmm. Some would argue that if a Jew is critical of Israel or if a Jew is critical of Zionist, that's automatically internalization of anti-Semitism. And some people take that position. I disagree with that. I think also that we have a lot of internal conflict over how we as a Jewish community relate to Zionism and the question of Palestine. And in this context, the accusation of being you're a self-hating Jew is actually a rhetorical strategy for delegitimizing somebody else's position. It's a way of delegitimizing some Jewish positions and trying to make other Jewish positions dominant.
Right, like it could be Orthodox versus Reform, or anybody who has a disagreement on how the Jewish community is taking shape or where it's going. That these internal struggles, like I guess these like mini civil wars, are sort of what self-hatred is based on, and. There's one Jew in particular, aside from the three of us, who really calls himself a self-hating Jew. Not that you guys call yourself self-hating Jews, but I do. I own it. And that's Howard Stern. And I think this would be a good moment to take a break and listen to what he has to say. And I want to put into context the clip that I'm going to play right now for the listeners. I know Shtetl is a very sweet and charming show, and we really like to make nice on Shtetl on the shortwave. But the clip I'm going to play right now is a little bit challenging. Some people might be offended by it, but I'm curious to hear what you guys are going to think of it. It's quite a long clip, and it's from another radio show that's not nearly as popular as Shtetl on the shortwave, the Howard Stern Show, but most people probably haven't heard of that. Anyways, so sit back and take a listen. This is Howard Stern, and you can actually Google this clip. It's Howard Stern, the self-hating Jew. So, and he's talking with his colleague on air.
Speaking of being Jewish, you know, this weekend was the big holiday.
Yom Kippur.
That's where this is the holiday where God really sits down, cracks open these books, looks over your life, and he says, all right, I'm going to let you live another year, if you've been good.
And this is the one where you fast, right?
And you fast, which the idea, I think, is to keep your mind on God rather than anything else. Like you just...
You don't even stop to eat. You just think about God for 24 hours.
Yeah, this is a huge final exam. All the Jews pile into a temple. Nobody eats. Everybody's breath stinks because they're not eating.
But everybody loads up before sundown.
Right.
Because I was visiting a friend out on Long Island, and we were trying to have an early dinner.
Right.
The restaurants were packed
with Jews. It was Jew City.
And everybody walked in and said the same thing. I thought this place would be empty.
Yeah, so it's a whole thing. Like, I know every Jewish custom and everything, but I don't follow them. Like, I was so indoctrinated as a kid. I had to go to Hebrew school every day after school, almost every day. And so what is in me now is... I never got turned on by the religion. It was a horrible experience. You know, the teachers were horrible. They were terrible people. They smelled. I didn't like them. I had one teacher who smelled so bad I couldn't take it. I think it was his breath or his body. I don't know
you
what it was.
You couldn't even determine which it was.
He'd come over, Tzvi. They named me Tzvi. First of all, fuck you. My name is Howard.
Why can't you just be Howard? Why do you have to have a separate name?
They had to give you a Hebrew name.
But why?
Robin, none of it made any sense. It made no sense. It made me anti-Semitic almost.
I was going to say, either is going to make you anti-Semitic or a multiple personality.
Right. I mean, I got so resentful. I had to go to this Hebrew. First of all, I put a full day in at school, and I was no rocket scientist at that school. I was doing bad enough at that. And then to spend your entire free time in this fucking Hebrew school learning a language. It was ridiculous. I learned how to read Hebrew, but I don't even know how to translate it. So what's the point?
You just spoke it? You didn't know what it meant?
I speak it. I can read it. I can read off the Torah. But so what? I don't know what it means. It's not like learning Spanish where you know the translation.
Yeah.
So I go, and the first day, one of these teachers gives me a name. I remember the teacher, though. He wasn't such a bad guy. But he was completely out of touch. He sits us down and he goes, I'm going to give you all a Hebrew name. So we'd go to like Mark. Mark, what? Your name is Mendel, which he really loved, because then they started calling him Mendel. Oh. He goes, you're Mendel, because Mark is Mendel. Right, that's what, there's a translation. So he goes, what's your name? I go, I'm Howard. So his head almost exploded. You know what I mean? He's like, all right, you're Tzvi.
How do you even spell that?
Tzvi. And it's like... It's horrible. Tzvi. I mean, it's just a disgusting name, right? I mean, who wants to be Tzvi? I don't have a hard enough time with girls. Now I'm Tzvi. I don't know what my mother was thinking. My mother's not an observant Jew. My father's not an observant Jew. They stick me in this fucking loony bin of a town where now I'm going to temple, like a conservative thing every single day. Once you look at your kids and say, what the fuck am I doing? I hated it. I wanted to hang myself. But they told me, you won't be bar mitzvahed. And it's also based on superstition. You won't be bar mitzvahed. Well, oh, my God, I won't be bar mitzvahed. I was so paranoid. I thought at 13, God visited you in your room, and then he tells you the secrets of being a man. Because God knows my father didn't describe to me how to be a man. I didn't know one fucking thing. I figured it's in God's hands.
Oh, my goodness.
My father never sat me down and explained how things work.
And the bar mitzvah is important. Why?
Exactly. Why? Because
you
why?
Mean you don't know?
I don't know. It's a covenant. My father never once said to me, this is why I want you to be bar mitzvahed, or I'm proud of you for being bar mitzvahed, or, you know, gee, how do you feel about this? Or no, just
would you
do
like it.
No, it didn't matter to him. He didn't look into things. He never looked into it. He goes, well, your mother raises you, not me. But what am I, a fucking dog? What am I, a pet you got for
you? You're just
my,
here.
Yeah, my dad didn't sit and explore what might be going on in my life. It was my mother's place to do that. My mother was, you know, I don't know. I think she's whacked out. Why would she send me to a conservative temple to go train every day to read fucking dumb Hebrew? What? It meant nothing to her. Why would it mean something to me? I could have been taking guitar. I could have been fucking Jimi Hendrix. Instead of 2 hours a day in that stupid temple, I could have been 2 hours a day studying guitar. But no, I studied a language nobody cares about. And quite frankly, people get killed for. I could have studied fighting. I could have been like a Chuck Zito. I could have been studying karate. For 2 hours a day, if you're going to force me to do something great.
Useful. Something you could use.
Yeah. And once a year, my parents would get religious. All of a sudden, they never went to temple. Once a year on this fucking Yom Kippur.
They didn't do the Rosh Hashanah thing, too?
Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur. And the reason they went is because all their friends went. They went to temple, and they all look at each other's outfits and goof on each other. And my father would be super Jew on Yom Kippur and Rosh Hashanah, and the hypocrisy was ridiculous. I mean, why are you super Jew 2 days out of the year? What is that? Because you think God is... You really think God is
He's going to ignore what you did the rest of the
right,
year.
Right.
And if you come in these 2 days, you're okay with me.
Well, then my old man would start fasting, and I think they wanted me to fast.
Did you ever?
I guess I did. I mean, I remember being miserable with a headache. My father, his breath would be terrible. My mother's breath, because they were all fasting. And when you fast, you don't eat anything. You can't have drink water. You know, toothpaste. Who do you eat toothpaste? Yeah, because I stink. I want to meet girls. Your life's over, not mine. And he'd be miserable, more miserable than usual. Sit all day in the fucking temple. In a
non-existent. What would you do?
Oh, I would just fidget and just be miserable.
Could you, like, bring books? Or?
No. You sit there and read this language no one understands. No one knows what they're reading. There's no interpretation. Even my mother said, you know, I really don't get much out of it.
But they keep doing it.
And they keep torturing me with it.
Whoa. That was a lot of Howard Stern. I don't know how you guys feel, but I feel like maybe I should take a break and play the Kol Nidre right now. I don't know, I find that clip kind of drives home the whole point of self-hatred and the conflict that's there. Like, listening to that, I feel like ashamed of, like, the way he's denigrating Judaism is awful. But on the other hand, I can relate to half of what he's saying. How did you guys feel about the clip? Be honest.
I guess I would say that I relate to it. It made me think of... just this past Passover, I had a Seder with my family, and it had been actually several years since I've been at a Seder with my family. I was living in Toronto, and I wouldn't do anything when I was by myself. But when I was a kid at Seder's, because there were so many little kids in my family, we'd really just do one song and the four questions, and that was about it. This past Seder, I got there and realized my parents were doing a lot of the prayers, taking a really long time to go through everything, which was completely foreign to me. And I found myself sort of becoming a bit resentful. I think it had to do with the fact I was so hungry. But I was sort of questioning, sort of having similar questions, I guess, that he's posing right there. It's sort of, why are we doing this? And do you really believe in this? And what's the point of this? It sort of made me wonder why we were going to such extremes to recognize certain aspects of the religion that I know that my parents don't really believe in certain ways. But at the same time, then there's this question of tradition, which I think my parents feel still a strong tie to. And part of me sort of hopes that one day I'll feel that tie too. I kind of there's something about it that I want to continue as well, but I guess sort of feeling ambivalent about it and sort of wondering what the point really is, I guess.
Yeah. I think Passover is like one of the trickiest holidays for a Jew who's not necessarily from an observant family. It's like that moment where you're doing, I think it's one of the coolest holidays, and there's these really interesting rituals, meaningful, deep rituals. But on the other hand, it could just seem like a lot of weird bullshit if you don't know what the hell you're doing. And so it's like you start feeling maybe like a bit of a fraud. Like, I'm doing all this weird stuff, but why? You know? I love the four questions. I love the whole concept of questioning, except I feel like a lot of times we're not really, really our questions aren't actually really welcome.
I mean, that's a great point. That's it's funny. That's where a whole ambivalence comes, right? Because on the one hand, there is this tradition of questioning. A tradition and an encouragement to really, really question. So when I went to my, the Sunday school, the Jewish Sunday school, in Vancouver, I remember if you asked a good question, you would get a candy, mm-hmm. you know? And then later in high school or as a young teenager, I had a couple of Christian friends whose parents would go to church, and I would sometimes go with them. And then I was sort of had been trained in the Jewish school, and I would like ask questions, and then I would totally get like, it was like, oh, you're not supposed to ask any questions when you're in church. I found out the hard way. But I think for Howard Stern, I'm not a big fan of Howard Stern. I don't find him that funny because I find him a little bit obvious, but mm-hmm. I think he's making a very good point. Like, I think his point is basically a good one. He's pointing out the cynicism of it. Now, you can do two things. You could say this is exactly classical self-hating Jewry, particularly to my mind when he focuses on the smell. There's that really sensory moment when he's focusing on the smell. And there is a thing like, if you've actually spent a full Yom Kippur in a synagogue with a lot of old Jewish men, there is a smell. There's a smell that's very, very different from any smell that I've smelt at a conference with an upwardly mobile, upwardly middle-class intelligentsia. There is a totally different smell on people's breaths in Yom Kippur at the end of the day than there is, you know, after a keynote lecture at a fancy international conference. So whose side do you take? Do you take the side of the mainstream culture and say those people smell weird? Or do you say, yeah, this is what happens on Yom Kippur? And so when Howard Stern is sort of, he's partaking of the othering of, you know, Yom Kippur Jewish breath. Right. So in that sense, you could say he's a classically, you know, doing that. But at the same time, he's asking a question that I think opens up a genuine conflict within Jewish culture, which is like, we have all these rituals. Why are we doing them? If you come from secular parents, why are you doing all this religious stuff? There's a bunch of rules and regulations that get handed down without making it meaningful, without making it relevant for us, for you and I, without talking about, okay, how is this about values? How is this about our shared values, and how are we a part of this? And I think that's a completely legitimate question for someone to ask. So at the basis of his bit there, seems to me, is that kind of question. He's saying, like, he's actually pointing out, he's actually asking a great question. How is this meaningful to me? How are all these rituals, even if he's othering them mm-hmm. in a way that might be classically self-hating, he is at the same time asking a genuine and good question that can be addressed in very real terms.
You know, this brings up two thoughts. One is, do we really want to be genuine Jews? Because being a genuine Jew who can relate to the Passover Seder as you go home to your parents and they're going through all the prayers, or if you go to Yom Kippur, or, you know, to be really able to feel like, you know, some sort of integration, like you fit, means you've got to like put some time into studying and exploring the stuff and learning it. And I feel like part of like the self-hatred is sometimes like, fuck, I've been given this thing and now I have this responsibility, like I have to do more work to fit into something that I don't fit into. And I'm going to have to go and read and study. And do I really want to do it? So it's like, and so then you can blame yourself for being a lazy Jew. And then even more self-hatred comes in. You know what I mean? But the other thing with this clip is that in doing some research for the self-hatred panel, or not the panel, the discussion that's going to be happening next week at the Sala Rosa, which I encourage all the listeners to come to, and you can go to shtetlmontreal.com and there's a link to get tickets on PayPal. I guess the research that I've been doing, a lot of stuff has come up about self-hating Jews, and some of it is actually kind of scary. like some of the sites that I've gone to that are by Jewish people about Jewish people are almost the same as sites that I've gone to that are like white supremacist sites. Like they give me that same chill, that same shock, you know? And listening to Howard Stern, I feel like there's like a bit of a line there where like, ooh, I could be listening to like a real racist right now, a person who really hates Jewish people. And it's like, I find there's like this weird line. Do you know what I'm talking about? Where like the self-hatred and the anti-Semitism, and they kind of like, they really intermingle in a way that's very uncomfortable.
Well, I think there's also, that just makes me think of how I know among my friends, like because we're my friends who are Jewish, we feel we can say anything we want about Jewish people, right? Like we have the liberty to sort of say anything that would be really prejudiced because we're Jewish, and then so it doesn't really matter what we say. And I've sort of been thinking about that a lot, like myself, in terms of my behavior and how I've maybe perpetuated certain stereotypes about Jewish people because of the ambivalence I've had, sort of giving myself the freedom to say what I want or act certain ways without realizing how I'm sort of complicit in a certain amount of prejudice. And I think there is sort of this weird line that you can cross that you're not always aware of, I guess.
I want to take a little break and we'll hear a little bit of music. And the song that we're going to hear is by Ya'el Naim. And then we'll be back on Shtetl on the Shortwave.
I'm flying far away to be really free. Tried hard to build myself independently. It's hard to always do what you expect from me.
Come home, no, just come home.
you live through. Today I only feel how I miss you. So it's only fair when it's hard to bear and you ask if I try.
Herzach Zi Shtetl auf Shortwave auf CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal.
Welcome back to Shtetl on the Shortwave. Interviewing Tamara Kramer about why today's episode on self-hating Jewry is one of the more difficult episodes she's put together. Why would you say that, Tamara?
Good question, Joseph. I don't know. There's a lot of fear around the subject. It's like just the word self-hatred is kind of chilling. And there's the association with it that's the kind of like fun, hip association, which is like the comedy aspect of it. You know, Woody Allen and Seinfeld and, you know, Curb Your Enthusiasm and the sort of funny association with it. And then there's the scary one where like you could be considered a heretic. You know, in the past, if you're considered a heretic, you were excommunicated and it could be very detrimental and dangerous. Now, it's not a physical excommunication. You're not going to be asked to leave where you live, but there's still this fear. And like I was saying, we just put up on the front page of Shtetl magazine, No Nice Jewish Boys, Sasha Lick My Knish's awesome, funny article. And while I was putting it up, I was very conflicted and nervous. Like, am I going to get in trouble for this? And a lot of times I do ask myself that, am I going to get in trouble from, I don't know who, the mainstream Jewish community, maybe God? I don't know. Like, but mostly other people. Am I going to get in trouble for rocking the boat? Am I going to be rejected for putting up thought? And so I get scared. And that's why this is a challenging subject.
Right. I mean, it makes sense. The question of are you going to get rejected is key. And I think is key to some of the ambivalent relations that we have about why we're ambivalent. Do I belong? Do I not belong? They can be very high stakes questions, right? Am I going to be rejected by this community for this or not?
Mm-hmm.
Is kind of big. And I think it's really important for us to explore these ambivalences. I mean, for me personally, this is kind of why I was attracted to thinking and talking about self-hatred. Really, when it comes down to it, is a way for us to talk about our ambivalences. So what does it mean that on the one hand, you feel Jewish and you're very interested in the way that your Jewish culture relates to your sexuality, but you're a little bit ambivalent about questions of money. So how do you play this out? And I actually think that we need to have a healthy, non-censorious discussion about our ambivalent relationship to it. And the purpose of that discussion is so that we can kind of hammer out, well, what is our relation to our Jewish culture, our Jewish history, and our Judaism, right? And in some ways, I think we need to kind of air out these ambivalences so that we can have a more creative relation to how we want to define ourselves as Jews.
Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what I was trying to ask you guys at the beginning. Like, what are some of these ambivalences? What are some of the things that make you feel uncomfortable or afraid even maybe about being part of the community? And I'm sure there's a lot there to explore. I don't know if any other stuff has come to mind, like throughout the show. Is there anything else that's come up for you guys? Sasha. Oh. It's so funny calling you Sasha. Sasha's afraid and hiding.
Okay, no, she's shaking her head. So, I mean, for me, I've always aligned myself with the critical history of Jewish culture, of mm-hmm. asking questions, and, you know, back in the day, being left-wing, being communists, right, being all kinds of union organizers. So for me, you sort of like, we invent these histories to invent a sense that we belong somewhere, right? So for me, in some ways, I think you're sort of attached to that kind of side of the history. And in doing that, we kind of attach to these larger collectives. You sort of feel like, especially in a really alienated capitalist society, you feel kind of on your own. So at least for me, I sort of feel like it was part of a way of aligning oneself with a larger history, a way of being critical, a way of sort of an ethics of the stranger, a kind of a nomadic history. They're all ways that I've aligned myself with that. But then, of course, you encounter this very real opposition. people that will, I mean, and I have been in context of discussions about Israel and Palestine, I have been accused of being a self-hating Jew in exactly that kind of way. And then you think, oh, maybe I don't belong then. Maybe I don't belong in this community, right?
Yeah. I think that's something that this has also come up in some of your writing, Sasha, in this article about why you don't want to date Jewish guys, which I could even ask you that, like, why don't you want to date Jewish guys? Although we only have a few minutes left, but you said, because I'm not a typical Jewish girl. I'm not a nice Jewish girl. So I don't, maybe I don't really fit. And maybe if I date a Jewish guy, he's going to ask me like, well, how Jewish are you? And how do you feel you measure up to the standard of being Jewish? Do you measure up? You know, that's the question.
Yeah, I guess that's why I've had such an ambivalent relationship with Judaism, is because the standard that I sort of saw, or what was presented to me by my family or like different experiences that I had, definitely did not fit with me. So that's something I'm continuing to work through. And I guess just, you were saying about sort of being honest and always being able to, not holding back from what I want to say, I guess particularly like in that piece and some of my other pieces, I've said some things that sort of relate back to my Jewish ambivalence. And we were sort of talking about being nervous about the reaction you're going to get. Or for me, I'm always worried that, like I said before, sort of perpetuating certain anti-Semitic remarks. So I always have ambivalence even about putting that in. But it's something about, I guess, airing it out, like you were saying, and trying to work through it, and just being very honest about it and hoping that people will sort of respond based on that, at least appreciate the honesty about it.
And I think people do very much appreciate the honesty in it. I think people in Montreal, people are always talking about how we are a very conservative community. But I think that within that, I think people are very, very thirsty and hungry to really talk things out and hear people's truths. And it's been so long that people have been kind of repressed in the community and sort of scared to speak their mind, that now that it seems like people might want to hear what, let's say young Jewish people are really thinking, hey, they're not so keen to come forward about it because like they're kind of afraid. And so I think that's a little bit of the work that we have to do in general in any community, but in particular, I feel it here in the Montreal Jewish community. Just like, if you really want to embrace who's in the community, then you have to make it a really safe space to talk about things in a non-violent way. I don't know if that's possible. It's hard to imagine.
I think that's a great point, because one thing that radio listeners wouldn't be able to hear is how all of our facial expressions, we've all sort of felt like you know, upset and concerned and worried about what we even just said, you know, moments ago. So it's like there's, you know, all three of us right here, we all have kind of, you know, it is kind of a dangerous topic in some ways, and we've all experienced that in some ways, which is why I think it's funny that the one question we haven't asked is, why is self-hatred so funny, right? Because it's kind of like, can you even think about Jewish comedy without asking the question of self-hatred? I mean, we can go through a series of Jewish comments, and it's all... So there's actually this really one way of approaching these topics has clearly been through comedy, mm-hmm. right? To joke about self-hatred. And that's what Howard Stern is sort of trying to do. I personally don't think he's actually that funny at that bit.
Right.
I'll take Larry David any day over Howard Stern, but... in some ways, he's trying to turn it all into a joke. And for him, that's his weird, ambivalent way of trying to state this critical point, right? He's also obviously, he's not sure whether he fits in. Does he fit in? Does he not fit in? Is he a part of the larger culture? Is he part of a culture with his parents, you know? And he's covering over the difficulties of those questions with comedy. Mm-hmm. But it's a difficult discussion.
Yeah, and he says some pretty heavy stuff in there too, like, you know, why the hell are they making me learn this gibberish, this useless waste of time Hebrew? I mean, people have been killed for that. And you're like, oh, that's kind of heavy. That's not funny. You know, but you're right. Howard Stern. I don't know. Was that a good clip to play, guys? I'm not sure. What do you think? Be honest, for crying out loud.
Oh, you're asking us?
Yes.
I thought it was great.
You did?
Yeah, definitely. It brought up a lot of the questions sort of we've been talking about this whole time, I think. And it sort of walks a very dangerous line that I think is important to sort of think about. So So I thought it was great.
Okay, great. Joseph, you don't have to answer. I can see it in your face. Okay, so I'm going to wrap things up. The next show is Butcher T's Noontime Cuts. He should be here any minute to play lots of great music. I want to thank everybody for tuning in to Shtetl on the Shortwave today and hope that you'll go to the website, shtetlmontreal.com, and check out the event section and find out all the information about next week's event. It's April 25th, Wednesday night, 7:30 at the Sala Rosa, and there are going to be multimedia clips, different guests, but the main idea is to get people talking about this subject. So if what you heard today interested you then and brought up anything for you, then come on out and share that with the community. So we're going to go out with one last song by a group that's playing at O Petrovice next week, also on Wednesday night. It's a bit of a Jewish ska song. And we'll be back in 2 weeks on Shtetl on the Shortwave.
Starless desert sky. Am I stuck in a foreign land, forever to live under another's command, forever to walk alone? Will I die in this foreign land? I don't think so, think so. I don't think so. Will I die in this foreign land? I don't think so, think so. I don't think so. Will I ever see my promised land? Chased by a woman.